Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're live. So we're only 30 minutes later than I promised, but I did say shortly after 3. I said
28 and a half minutes.
I said just after 3. So that could mean, after, you know, we're, I mean, mm-hmm. Hollywood time is, you know, fashionably late. So
we only for the A-listers, and that's who we got here today.
That's what I'm talking about. Houston Film Critics Society in the house, president and CEO, Doug Harris, a.k.a. Junior Mintz.
Howdy.
How you doing, buddy?
May I introduce my colleagues, Regina Scruggs.
You need to do that.
Who had a wonderful career in the public broadcasting arena, as well as many other wonderful radio stations across the U.S. of A. A specialty in music in the movies, or music from the movies. What was the name of that show?
It was called Music from the Movies.
So the best of both possible worlds here with music as well as. And to her right, your left, James Cole Clay VII, Cole to his friends. You're going to have to remind me, because you recently added a media outlet, correct?
Yeah. That's what I'm always trying to do, pretty much. But yeah, I just added a media outlet website called Consequence of Sound, music, movies, TV, stuff like that. Big site based out of Chicago. Good people. Good stuff.
Consequence of Sound. I kind of dig it. And you can hear me on Third Rock Radio and Made in Texas Radio. But we're thrilled to be here on the Grego Show on the spot.
That's right, because the Academy Awards are Sunday night. I don't know which one this is. What's the number? Do we know?
92.
You see, these are film.
Ding, ding, ding. See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Cinemaphiles.
Sure.
People know what's going on. And there's a lot of films that are being talked about. A lot of people have different varying opinions on what's going to win and why and all that. Like you had mentioned to me the other day about some movie that was shot in Peru or something like that.
Well, so I'm going to make a suggestion because we could get a couple of the big categories out of the way, because I think the three of us will agree that they're fairly less contested than Best Picture. Could we start with Best Actor?
Well, you're from the Film Critics Society. You can do whatever you want.
These guys are so much smarter than me, though. So I think can we all agree, colleagues and friends, that the Best Actor category, which is going to go down to a dead heat between Joaquin Phoenix and Adam Driver. Mm-hmm. Are we good with that? So Adam Driver will be the role in
Marriage Story.
And Joaquin in the hotly controversial contested role of Joker.
Yeah, I think it was called Joker.
Yeah.
Joker, never heard of it.
So a stellar performance that got a lot of unnecessary blowback because of its apparent celebration of violence. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Lots of blowback, a lot of East Coast blowback as well. That was kind of the main where a lot of it was coming from. But
there are a lot of violent movies. Why blowback on that one in particular?
I think because it's like sympathy for the devil sort of thing. But I think that that's kind of an interesting perspective. When I saw the film in Toronto, I came out of the theater and there was some, you know, I would say to be nice, like there's some transient folks around downtown and you just see things in a different way after seeing people like that. You want to look people in the eye more and say, hello, how is your day going? Rather than being a little more self-centered. So, I mean, that's what I got out of the movie, at least from that level. But on a pure visceral level, I still think the film is a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. I think it was because he does go through these killing sprees with no remorse whatsoever. Is that what people were talking about?
Yeah, I think that they are. I liked the film. I thought his Joaquin Phoenix's performance was phenomenal. And if he does win this weekend, it'll be the second time someone will have won playing the Joker. Because don't forget Heath Ledger.
That's right.
Posthumously awarded the Oscar.
And then let's not forget Adam Driver, who, can I say, has had a hell of a year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's done all right this year.
In case the folks cannot match the name with the face just yet, maybe they've been living in it. Can you match the name with the face?
No,
okay.
I can't.
Top role this year, Marriage Story.
I would say his top role is Marriage Story, but most people are going to know him as Kylo Ren in Star Wars.
Right. Oh!
Yeah.
The angsty baddie from the new Star Wars series. So, yeah, that's what people know him from. But this guy is, like, so diverse. He's like a five-tool player. Since, you know, we're sitting in a sports studio, he's a five-tool player. He can act, he can dance, he can sing, he can be funny. So to me, that's the top choice. But, you know, you know, Joaquin has a lot of goodwill for a lot of years, you know.
You know, it's interesting. The Fandango poll that was done by a bunch of people, they said that you're right. You're right on it. They say Joaquin Phoenix is favored by the general public by 55% and Adam Driver for Marriage Story, 20%. In a nutshell, encapsulate Marriage Story for us. That is a film about...
It is the most bitter divorce custody battle between two people who were once passionately in love in the worst possible state in the union to get a divorce with amazing performances. It's heartbreaking and gut-wrenching, and it's just an incredible performance. When's the last time you saw something great from Ray Liotta?
I mean, really. 30 years, Goodfellas, maybe?
Laura Dern, spectacular performance. It's a marvelous film, but it's about just a heartbreaking divorce and custody battle and evil lawyers. And how'd I do on that one?
Otherwise, I think you did okay. You did
otherwise fine. Known as the Terry Michaels story. He has just joined us, the poor guy.
Yes, yes. And I couldn't have joined you at a more poignant moment in my life for hearing what that story is. I guess I need to watch that one too.
Not the feel-good film of the year, but no. Scarlett Johansson was astounding. Just so many, an incredible ensemble cast, but the purpose here is to demonstrate that it's a dead heat. Let's call it now. A Joaquin or Adam?
It's going to be Joaquin because he's won Golden Globes. He's won BAFTAs. He's won Screen Actors Guild. It's got to be Joaquin. The movie grossed $1 billion.
Joaquin has the momentum, and that's important in award season.
Okay. Can we now work to a best actress? Because there's someone that, I don't know, we'll see her at the HGB, but Katy, Texas native, Renee Zellweger, nominated for what is truly an astounding performance in a pretty good movie. Judy, what are your thoughts?
It's Renee's award to lose.
Oh.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
How well.
Regina really making a strong statement on that.
Well, I mean, again, she has the momentum, and there have been a lot of good best actor performances this year, a lot of good best actress performances this year, but, you know, it's about Renee. She's going to get her second Oscar this Sunday.
It's definitely Renee Zellweger. Yeah.
If there's a surprise, who will it be from the cast, from the lineup of nominees?
Scarlett Johansson, right?
I would say Scarlett is probably in second place.
I mean, Looking at the nominees, Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, Saoirse Ronan for Little Women, Charlize Theron for Bombshell, Renee Zellweger for Judy, Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story.
So we're going to call it four?
It's got to be Judy. It's about the momentum Regina mentioned. Yeah.
And this movie, Eddie Judy, is...
The later, more troubled aspect of the life of Judy Garland with flashbacks to why maybe it was so horrible and makes her no less an adored figure, but slightly more sympathetic and calls out the creeper, too.
Also want to point out, for those who haven't seen the film, Renee does her own singing. Very often in these musical biopics that have gone on in the past, there might be an actor but who'll be lip-syncing to the recordings of the original artist. And this has also happened in the past with biopics about Judy Garland. But I believe this is the first time that the actress who is portraying Judy does her own singing. And don't get me wrong, she doesn't sound exactly like Judy Garland. But if someone is going to make an effort, I think that she puts it over.
Similarly to how Taron Egerton sang in Rocketman, the Elton John biopic.
That's right.
It's a nice trend.
Yeah, yeah. And again, this is not the usual thing. Usually they lip sync.
But yeah. And some of the same costuming.
Yeah. So both Regina Scruggs and James Cole Clay, I'm going to keep moving, are predicting that Renee Zellweger gets this award. Now, according to Fandango, you said the name perfectly. You said
Saoirse Ronan.
Ronan, they are saying from Little Women by 31% is favored for Best Actress. Scarlett Johansson, then 26%. And then Renee Zellweger for Judy at 19%. So you're out there. Let's see.
I would be happy to be wrong. If for my personal favorites, I would be happy to be wrong in this scenario.
Can we dive into Best Picture? Because this is the one where it's not a head-scratcher, but it's like, I can remember last year people saying, hey, what was your favorite film of 2018? I'm going, well, I kind of like this. This one, I have a dozen favorites. He's got favorites that I haven't even seen. This lady has a much more purist view of film, and she's got favorites I haven't seen. But as far as the nominees, where do we go? What do we pick? Let me ask my colleagues, is it possible that the Academy is going to give top picture honors to a film that's in a foreign language?
No.
Okay.
I think Parasite's going to get best foreign language film, and that's going to leave the door open for somebody else to move to squeak in. And I think that, again, the momentum in the last several weeks with the previous award shows. It's gone to 1917.
Did you see Parasite in Toronto?
Yeah, I did. I saw it with the cast and crew and everybody else that was there. Parasite's a fine film. It's totally rewatchable. But there's so many people that are not going to want to get past the subtitles. And there are these articles that come out every year. You'll see from Variety, honest Oscar voters. And they'll just say blatantly like what they think of the movies. They're all anonymous, but man, it's brutal. And they're just like, I don't care about this. I cannot watch subtitles. So it's not, there's never been a foreign language film to win Best Picture.
It's the storyline is about a family of, I don't want to spoil it, I get grifters. We'll call them grifters.
Sure, yeah.
And it eventually evolves into sort of a eat the rich tale, a bit of violence. I'm going to stop there, but it's in Korean, but it's just a it's a beautifully crafted film. It's just, you just got to get beyond the fact. What was it that the Bong Joon-ho mm-hmm. said so brilliantly about, if you'll get over the bottom.
He said 1 inch of subtitles, if you can get past that barrier, you can have your mind open to a world of cinema that you never could have discovered. Something to that effect.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. You know, I watch TV in subtitles. Mm-hmm. I put my Netflix on subtitles all the time.
You put the closed captioning on.
Yeah, closed captioning, because I find that sometimes you miss little intricacies, nuances that are very important.
A lot of people do that. I do it.
Yeah, me too. And after a while, when you don't want to pay attention, you don't even see it.
And even some films that are in English, supposedly in English, like Irish films, Scottish films, the accents are so thick that I can't understand half of what they're saying.
Yeah.
So I have to have the closed captioning on if I have.
Yeah, I was Game of Thrones that when it started. I couldn't pay
attention. Speaking of Irish films.
Yeah.
There's an Irish man.
Yeah, and, it's not an Irish film, but it's The Irishman. No. So, yes. And that's one you've seen, right?
That is one, the only one.
the only one of all the Best Picture nominees that you've seen.
Oh, man, I'm going to try to do better, but it is the truth. I know.
What'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I think it could have been 30, 45 minutes shorter, but I liked it a lot. It harkened back to mob movies of the past, even though they were a little bit older to play hitmen. You know, a little bit. But then again, you know, you're talking about De Niro, you know.
But did you watch it all in one take in a theater, or did you watch it home on Netflix?
I watched
I
watched it on Netflix.
Okay.
Yes, I didn't. What's the difference in that? What would that have been?
What I mean is that did you
you can't pause it at the theater.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I watched it in one go.
In one go.
The feeling at the end was, okay, all right, let's.
I got it.
All right, that's one of the feelings he probably had.
But I liked it a lot. So how do we feel about The Irishman, Regina?
I watched it at home also. I stopped and started it. In fact, I watched it over a couple of days. I've kind of got through the middle of it, and I was going, is this thing over yet?
Yeah.
So you did not do that where you would be afterwards immediately.
No. I'm a Martin Scorsese fan. I've been him. I'm old enough so that I've been with him from the beginning, you know, through his whole career, De Niro, Keitel, Pesci, the whole gang. You know, we've been together for almost 50 years now. So I felt like this was kind of a coda to all those films he'd done with those gentlemen in the past. If he's going to do another film after this, who knows? He's 77, something like that. And, you know, I mean, there are directors who are, of course, still making films. Clint Eastwood's about to be 90, and he just said today, I'm not going to retire, you know, and so forth. So, you know, there are people out there that are still going on in their 80s and 90s and so forth. So it's not necessarily that he's going to retire, but, you know, I don't know if he's going to go back and visit these types of characters with these actors again. I think this was his wrap-up.
Yes. What did you think, James?
I mean, I like it. I grew up with Scorsese from a very young age on cable. Then I graduated to seeing him on DVD with Goodfellas and stuff like that. And yeah, this is more, it is, it's a commentary on his past and it's a commentary for all that stuff. Now, you know, that's going to have some diminishing returns for people who think that, oh, he just works with the same actors. There's a lot of things I've seen. This is the same thing over and over. De Niro hasn't changed. But I do think that there is some groundbreaking stuff with the de-aging and just trying new things with cinema. Making a movie that's 3.5 hours just because we can. I'm down with that. You know, it's tough and it's not going to be for everybody, but it is a profound statement to make. Even though it wasn't in my top films of the year, I still respect it quite a bit.
Well, I have a little slightly different take, but along the same lines. We have seen this Robert De Niro before. We've even seen this Harvey Keitel before. A little bit of Mr. Wolf in there, just a bit. We have seen this Al Pacino. I mean, at one point, he's on the dance floor with a girl. I'm sorry. You know, we've seen that before.
Sense, right.
Scent of a woman. We've seen that. But we have not seen this Joe Pesci before. We have not seen this calm, ingratiating, yeah, let me help you with that towel. What, you need a biscotti? To go. We have not seen that guy. We have seen the manic, crazy. That guy. We haven't seen this Joe Pesci. Yeah. And that made it worthwhile for me. Listen, if Marty made a training video for Best Buy employees, I'd watch it. You cannot not see Martin Scorsese film. But you see this one for Joe Pesci.
I liked the whacking, the way it was done up close and quick with that right to the head. I mean, boom.
Very efficient.
It was very efficient. So name the category and call it. Go ahead.
For Best Picture?
We got to talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, come on.
We got to talk.
Let's do the nominees real quick. I have them right here. Okay. Uh-huh. So Best Picture nominees, Ford v. Ferrari, mm-hmm. The Irishman, mm-hmm. Jojo Rabbit, mm. Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite.
Let's talk about Once Upon a Time. What do you think about it, Cole?
Oh, man.
Quentin Tarantino.
I loved it. It was a hangout film. You felt cool watching it. Listening to those 60 tunes, listening to that retro Neil Diamond playing, all that music coming, those little interstitials that they would play that you would hear on terrestrial radio back in the day. And then, you know, pair that with like just that amazing glow of California with a little bit of danger lurking around. It's a good hang. And it's some incredible acting too. It's a good hang of a movie. It's really fantastic.
Well, I think it's a nice way of describing it. A good hang. It is a movie you kind of hang out with. And again, as someone who is of a certain age, and who was around during those years, it was fun to revisit all the references. Somebody had to ask me, was there actually a TV show called Mannix? Yes, there was. You know, this sort of thing.
I remember that.
You know. So for me, it was fun to revisit, as he was just saying, the music, the old TV shows, the old movies and stuff like that. I forgot that Joe Namath made a movie, you know, I mean, this type of thing. So from that standpoint, it was a lot of fun. And I thought that Tarantino, who I haven't always loved, okay, I've had a mixed relationship with him since the beginning, and he's made his ninth?
Yeah. How does he feel about that?
Well, the last time I talked to him, he said, well, Regina, you know, get with it. You know, because I'm fabulous. You know, come on. Which is probably what he would say. But in any event, but I like this one. I it wouldn't be my top pick for the year, but I thought it was very strong for him and kind of the least Tarantino-like of the Tarantino films, which is probably why I liked it.
Yeah. Doug?
I lived through all this. I mean, I remember seeing Sharon Tate in Playboy. I remember knowing about Roman Polanski, and it was not like watching a home movie, but I was familiar with these characters. I knew about Charles Manson. I knew instantly when they deviated from the actual historical timeline and the way things played out. I liked his version better than the way things actually were.
It's a little more endearing.
It was horrible that people died, but there was a bit of at least maybe Tarantino gave us what international comic justice would have, cosmic justice would have looked like. If it had been there.
What about Jojo Rabbit? A lot of it seems to me like it would be a very interesting movie, even
what
though
is that? Is that the guy where okay, he's I'm sorry. With Hitler?
I got this one. I got this one. So
yeah.
Set in the final days of the fall of the Third Reich in Berlin, you got a 9-year-old boy, and like so many 9-year-old boys at the time, he was being recruited by the Hitler Youth.
To be the SS or
well, younger version, yes. And then like so many 9-year-old boys, he has an imaginary friend. Only his imaginary friend is Hitler, but this, and it's a comedy of sorts, but it's very sympathetic to the horrors of the war. There are some sympathetic characters. It treats the issue of the Holocaust with an element of respect, and I won't quite say restraint. There's a love story. It's cute. It's one of the films of the year that I said, oh my gosh, I'm going to remember this one. I hope everybody else does. And sure enough, here it is on the list of Best Picture nominees.
I think somebody said that, not, wasn't me, but somebody said that wasn't Mel Brooks the last person who was allowed to make fun of the Nazis, you know? So
right, springtime.
I think there's something to I think there's something to that. But as Doug pointed out, I think it was a really good balance of comedy and drama, and you know, I enjoyed it very much.
Enjoyed it.
What do you think? Come on.
Look, it was one of my most anticipated movies of the year. The director, Taika Waititi, I think most viewers would recognize his name from directing the third Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. But this guy, he's got his own sense of humor that if it hits you, it's going to hit you here. It's going to be guttural. And if it doesn't, you know, you might think this is a bit mannered. But you know, I mean, there is something that has to be said. As somebody who sees, oh gosh, so many movies, something has to be said for something that is wholly unique. You know, this is adapted from a book, but he made it his own. He made it his own thing. It's textured. It's layered. Not one of my favorites. I think I hyped it up a little too much in my own mind, but I think it's one that people are actually going to remember. So many times in the Oscars, people are saying, I haven't heard of this film for Best Picture. What is this? What is that? This is one that people are going to discover for years to come. There's going to be a kid sitting at home feeling lonely, feeling sad, and just sees this on HBO one day and is just going to like be blown back in their seat, you know? And I think that that's what's it talks to kids, you know. It's for adults, but it talks to kids as well.
And another fine performance by Scarlett Johansson.
Absolutely. Oh man. Absolutely.
Another lady has been very busy this year.
Yeah.
And sidebar, James Cole Clay makes the comment that he sees a lot of movies. You just got back from Toronto.
I went to Toronto with a colleague.
And you saw how many movies?
33 in 8-9 days, something like that.
Just sort of, this was the Toronto International Film Festival. This is a very prestigious thing. And James Cole Clay and your former broadcast buddy Dustin Chase.
Oh yeah,
went up there and did the battle the Toronto weather.
We're relentless.
So it's compressed. They didn't like go from multiplex to multiplex. It was, you know, in a compressed area, and it was how many 4 and 5 films scheduled a day?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, walking distance, fun, eating a lot of scones and things like that, and missing Texas barbecue, but no sweet tea there either, which is really weird. But
not
good
not an unremarkable feat. It's just astounding. How many movies you figure you saw last year?
I think I did. I get on this site called Letterboxd, it's a social media site, and it's I logged 180, and that includes Netflix stuff too. If there are like Netflix original films, that includes that too. I think Netflix is part of the conversation
we
now.
We have a few people in our group that see more films than that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Wow. You know, wow.
That's why you're all members of the Houston Film Critics Society. I mean, you talk about this stuff like people discuss sports as we sit in a sports studio. I mean, you know the ins and outs of it.
Okay, now how about those Astros?
And how about them? How about them?
Are we neglecting any other Best Picture?
Did y'all do Joker already? Did y'all talk about that at the beginning when I wasn't here? I'm interested about it because it was kind of a controversial film last year.
Well, we did a little bit of that. We touched it, but we were doing it per category. So we're in the Best Picture category at the moment.
Which is Joker.
And Joker is there. So...
No, so I think where people,
I guess I just wanted to hear myself talk.
I saw the new Harley Quinn yesterday, and now I'm all amped up about. I didn't see that Joker movie. Maybe I should have.
Oh yeah.
I really appreciated the Harley Quinn last night. So that was or the night before last.
So
night.
Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
And it has another thing about this long that goes with it.
Yes, it's the Harley Quinn and the Fabulous Birds of Emancipation of the Fabulous Birds of Prey or
something to that effect.
Yeah, people will remember that. They'll remember to put a period after this version of Emma.
Yeah.
Inside joke.
Oh, you're right.
Well, Joker's a solid movie. It's cool. It has a lot of different elements working for it. You know, if people are offended by the film or things
get
like
alive.
That, well, you know, I kind of say, you know.
Was it offensive? Did you find it offensive?
No, I found it riveting on every level. Yeah.
If you just like to see people, you know.
It's not necessarily about that. There's some awesome cinematography. There's this cool throwback feel to it that just feels like you're watching it on an old tube TV. And it has that texture of that dirty 80s New York that you would see in movies. And this director, Todd Phillips, he did the Hangover films. So people are like, what? Where did this come from? But it really comes from a place, a really morose place. And I think that people don't like that. But at the same time, the movie did make $1 billion. And, you know, it really landed on a lot of top 10 lists. And it also, I mean, look, the movie came out 4 months ago. What are we doing right now? We're talking about this movie still. There's something to that. And I hope that it gets people to watch at least, you know. You never know what Joaquin is going to say on the stage. I encourage everybody to get on YouTube to watch his acceptance speeches from the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes. And then what he does afterwards. It is wild. He is truly a unique person and
insane, I believe, is the
well look, you can
word.
See how he got into this role pretty smoothly. I mean, he's an interesting dude. I really like him.
I think a lot of the blowback was you could argue that they were trying to excuse as they explained Joker's why does he have the laugh? Oh, I get it. That's because he has this thing. I'm gonna tell you what it is. And where did he get the makeup? Oh, because he did this. And there's an effort to explain that kind of comes off occasionally as excuse. He was put upon. And I think that's what people, are you condoning that behavior? Well, no. You can't go over to Kroger and do that in the middle of the afternoon. you know, anywhere you can't go. And I think that may have been, what's your take? Is that
well, look, yeah, it's a film. I want to see my boundaries pushed. I want to see my buttons pushed. I like that. I like getting scratched a little bit here and there. That's my personal feelings on it. Not everybody likes that, but if you like to have that kind of uneasy kind of turn inside yourself feeling,
that's
he climbs inside of a fridge in this movie wearing the most weirdly fitting whitey tighties you can imagine. It's images like that. Yeah. It's strange images like that you'll see. Wow. And a movie that made, again, $1 billion. It's just mind-blowing to me.
Wow. Regina, do you have thoughts on it?
Well, we talked about it a little bit when we were talking about the Best Actor Award. So we were talking about Joaquin Phoenix earlier. And I had said at the time that I believe I said that, you know, I liked the film and I thought that Joaquin was just phenomenal in it. So I was already predicting that he's going to, you know, win the award this Sunday, Sunday evening.
And 1917 is...
1917. Yeah. We haven't really talked about 1917. That's another nominee for this Best Picture for this weekend. This is a movie that really deserves to be seen in the theater because the cinematography in it is just so phenomenal. Roger Deakins, who won a couple of years ago for Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. This is the same cinematographer. Sam Mendes, the director. We haven't talked about Best Director yet, but he just won the Directors Guild Award a week or so ago. And again, I think this film has the momentum for Best Picture and Best Director right now.
Have we touched all the films in the Best Picture category?
We haven't, but I think we've hit sort of the front runners.
Yeah, we have the gist of it for sure.
And it's time for y'all to call it. Who wins Best Picture?
I think Hollywood will vote for Hollywood.
Once upon a time.
I think so. I don't think they have the courage, cojones, to make the statement that the Houston Film Critics Society did and several others did about Parasite. So we know that's not going to happen, which leaves 1917, which is a spectacular, beautiful film about horrors of war, which is an interesting contradiction. And I don't know. I'm going to say Hollywood goes. It's a film that the Academy will go, yes, go see that. Go buy the DVD, the box set, you know, buy the soundtrack, buy. Not that that's what it's all about.
Hmm. Well, I think that 1917 is going to win. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood might be the spoiler, but I think in the end it's going to be 1917. Mm. For Best Picture.
Yes, I'm with my colleague Regina Scruggs on this one.
Wow.
Yeah, 1917, I go for, when I'm looking at stuff, I go for stats. And if you look at stats of like the guilds and things like that, then that is what's really going to tell you what's going to win, in my opinion. There are some deviations there, but... Look, with all due respect, the Academy is not as sophisticated as you might think. And not to say that Hollywood and 1917 aren't sophisticated films, but they are not going to really want to watch things like that, like Parasite. So I think Hollywood, praising Hollywood, I think that's great, and that's really would be my choice to win. Even though I think 1917 is an excellent film, and you should see it on the biggest screen possible, it is an absolute feat. It is a really wonderful film. I'll say it's the best war movie since Private Ryan, so that's 98, and that's 2020. So, you know, it's got to be 1917 just because of the trajectory that he has. So if I'm going to Vegas, that's what I'm picking.
And so does that mean director as well?
Yeah.
A lot of times director, best director and best film, except when Spielberg's involved sometimes, seem to fall into place. So QT and Hollywood or Sam Mendes and 1917?
Sam.
Yeah.
Sam.
So Sam Mendes, best director, and 1970 best film, 1917, and possibly, you know, more I think about it, I'm throwing in with these guys. They convinced me.
Let's go all in. You're going 1917.
It's the year for Sam Mendes because the Queen just decided to knight him, so we're going to have to call him Sir Sam at this point.
Oh,
so
nice.
He's on a roll, okay? So going with Sam.
All right.
The Fandango poll said Parasite by 20% of the people that they
for best picture
for best picture, followed by 1917 at 19% and Joker at 15.
So I don't think they thought it through as well as the panel here.
Oh, this is amazing.
Thank you. I think
we're getting stroked here.
And because it's like this, because you see,
you're right. We're
never wrong. So there you have it.
No, I think you're right. I think it's easy for people to say like, oh yeah, Parasite, like a foreign investor. Yeah, I think it's easy for them to say that. But I think y'all are very correct in saying that maybe they don't all want to sit and watch, you know, that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 1917, it's a great, elegant film, but there's still some meat and potatoes to it. And there's a lot of meat and potatoes in the Academy, people who like that sort of things. Some of the pundits call them steak eaters. But, you know, look, 1917 is an incredible film. That thing broke boundaries. It's a great movie. So.
As I think I said before you came in, is that Parasite's going to get best foreign language film. So yes, it's already kind of covered.
If
that weren't the case, then I think it would have something of a chance for best picture.
See, and that's why I thought it was well thought out, because you're right. You did mention that the best.
In a year when there are some spectacular foreign language films.
Absolutely.
And there's some other really good performances that maybe didn't get Oscar nominations or whatever. And one that you liked was Adam Sandler.
Oh, come on. Adam Sandler and Uncut Gems. I'm telling you what. Yeah, he brings it.
Really?
He brings it. It's
I never thought I would utter this sentence, but I'm going to say it right now. Adam Sandler gave a great performance last year.
Wow.
Incredible.
I am not kidding you. I shock myself by saying that. But Uncut Gems, seek it out, because he does a fantastic job. He plays this. He's in the jewelry business. He plays this. He's a street New York street guy. He likes to take chances. He makes some big bets, and I won't say any more, except the movie will unfold and you'll understand what I'm talking about. But I grew up in New York, okay. And my father, may he rest in peace, was a compulsive gambler. Uh-huh. Oh, so I understood this character.
Give it for New York.
Okay. All right. I grew up in the Bronx. Okay?
Yeah.
So, but Sandler's character resonated with me, and I never thought I would say that. But man, it's a good film, a strong film, and he's great in it.
So we've covered the best picture category. We've covered actually the best director with Sam Mendes. You've called that pretty much.
Yeah.
Let's get into the best supporting actor. What do you think about that?
You guys take the lead on another tough one.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Well, Brad Pitt has the momentum. Going back to my favorite word this afternoon, for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think he's going to take it. He's been nominated the 3 or 4 times before. I don't remember exactly how many times. And sometimes with actors, and maybe sometimes with directors too, sometimes it's just their year. Sometimes it's just their time. And I think it's Brad's time this year.
Yeah, he's had a little bit of a comeback because he's been sort of hurting for a while. I thought he was very put together at the Golden Globes when he stood up there and made that speech. I was really impressed with how he presented himself from years past.
He's great. Yeah, I mean, he's instantly likable. I mean, everybody, you know, as the old saying go, women want him, men want to be him. And he, you know, he's able to joke at himself and poke fun at his personal life on stage, things like that. And man, he really kills it. But he says to himself, he admits in one of his speeches, he said something to the effect of, it's not really a stretch for me to play a stoner who likes to take his shirt off, but I am appreciative of this award.
Yeah.
So with that sort of levity, you know, I mean, it's pretty undeniable. And it's just a cool, laid-back performance. Everybody wants to be relaxed like that and just go with the flow.
And, you know? Not to take anything away from Joe Pesci, we were talking about before, because, you know, he Joe does a phenomenal job in The Very Long Irishman. But no, I think it's Brad's year.
That's what Fandango actually says as well, with 41%, followed by Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, 40%, and then Pesci's last with only 9%. But let's go to the Tom Hanks movie.
One of my favorite shows.
Right? Oh, man, The Show. Come on. How does that touches your heart? But the film, not so great, in my opinion. He's fine, and there's so many Tom Hanks performances I would much prefer. But so this one to me is an afterthought. It doesn't really follow Mr. Rogers. It follows a grumpy reporter.
That's what I get every time. That's where everyone starts out with the thought it was Mr. Rogers.
Exactly.
But it's this guy that it follows, and it's not Mr. Rogers. I mean, it's a Life of Brian situation.
Totally.
The guy next to Jesus.
Totally. Jesus. Totally. Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Well, see, but there was a very good documentary about Mr. Rogers that came out a year or two ago, which is, you know, if you really want the Mr. Rogers story, that's what you should really be watching.
He's like a fairy godfather that sprinkles his, you know, his essence around, you know, people's lives. And, you know, there's some touching moments.
Was it true? Was it a true story?
I think it's based upon an article that actually happened, but I don't think, look, here's my thing, okay? The guy is this guy who has a very nice brownstone in New York, has a beautiful wife and kid, and has a job at Esquire, and yet he is miserable. And I'm just like, dude, like, I will absolutely trade. I mean, I love my life, but I'm just saying to feel sympathy for somebody so morose in that sort of financial situation, it's a little bit hard to cross the threshold, especially in a day and age that we are in today. So,
Nice. Oh, you're making me want to buy a DVD player.
Oh, man. Wow. Right here on your phone, buddy. Right here on your phone.
You're kidding. Seeing the videos on wanting a DVD player. Realize you don't need those anymore.
So, best supporting actress? I think that rounds out the.
I have something to say about that. I'm just trying to get over this. I got to get a DVD.
Yeah, who is this guy?
What the hell is going on here? Okay, Laura Dern. Can we talk about Laura Dern for a second? No, in Marriage Story, okay? Mm. This is a really good film. We already talked about Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver as the two main characters, the divorcing couple. And Laura Dern comes in as Scarlett's divorce attorney. Is that right? That's right. Yeah, sir. She kind of annoyed me a little bit in this role. You know, I thought she came on a little bit too strong. But she's been getting nominations. She's nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but she just wouldn't be my personal pick, frankly. You know, she kind of annoyed me a little bit. So
you feel from Bombshell, maybe? I liked
Margot Robbie very much. I liked all the Bombshell gals, you know. And I'm really sorry that who played Roger Ailes?
John Lithgow
was fierce, man. I was just really sorry he didn't get he hasn't gotten the recognition that he really deserves for that role, because he was fierce in that film. But Laura Dern kind of bothered me.
Well, Laura Dern, she's the front runner, but what's pretty fascinating is Scarlett Johansson, who's Black Widow, as your general audience members would recognize her. She's nominated for supporting actress and lead actor.
That's right.
And this is her first time to ever be nominated. So, yeah, so she got a double nomination. She's paired against Laura Dern, who we already mentioned, Kathy Bates in Richard Jewell, which is a fascinating performance, Florence Pugh in Little Women, who is going to be in Black Widow along with Scarlett Johansson in a few months, and then Margot Robbie in Bombshell. It's a stacked category. I go for the heart, and Scarlett Johansson captured my heart in Jojo Rabbit. She's incredible. So that's who I would choose. It's probably going to be Laura Dern.
Probably who I would choose, too, although I think Laura Dern's going to get it. About Scarlett being nominated in both the Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress categories. This has happened before with Alien. Sigourney Weaver was nominated in both categories 1 year. Unfortunately, she lost both. So I'm hoping, hoping that won't be the same thing for Scarlett. That's got to be very frustrating, you know. Mm. Two Academy Award nominations and you don't get either one. That's got to be a long walk home, you know, for that. But we'll see. But no, Laura's probably going to win.
I'll go with that.
We've covered Laura Dern. You covered Scarlett Johansson earlier. And now Florence Pugh, Little Women. She's got, according to Fandango, a 28% chance of winning.
That would be excellent.
I wouldn't mind.
She's amazing in it.
She's really good.
Yeah.
I think she's Australian, isn't she? Australian?
She's English.
Okay. I'm sorry, you're right.
She's English. She was in a pretty disturbing horror movie called Midsommar that people may have seen. Had a bit of a buzz, but Little Women was like her coming out party, essentially, with this film. And the movie, you know, I want people to see it. It really is better than you're predisposed to think it would be. Look, I love period pieces. I love costumes and things like that and elegant music and stuff. But this movie really talks about just the kindness that you should have. And also forging your own path in life, which is harder than it looks. And especially for the character that Florence Pugh plays, she wants to be a painter and, you know, not rely on a guy to pay all her bills. And I think that's kind of admirable in a way, and especially in the context of this film. And she's just pretty charming, you know, I think. But I still would go with Scarlett. I mean, she just absolutely shredded me with her parentage to her son in Jojo Rabbit. She really, really nailed it. It's very warm. Made me think of my own mother.
So what you're saying is that you think Scarlett's the one who should win, but Laura Dern's the one who's going to win.
Yeah, and Florence Pugh is solid, but she just started. So.
And if we're all wrong, then you'll just 86 is this completely. It'll vanish from social media, and we'll never have to look at this again.
Right? No, let me tell you.
Because we're never wrong.
Yeah, I tell you what, I've loved this, even though, and this is telling you honestly, as someone who didn't see most of these movies. Listening to you discuss them, it was almost enough to make me want to go and watch them. You know, I mean, you really, you have really, you know, precise and well-thought opinions on these things.
And go see.
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say that, you know, you can get a discount on your DVD players at Best Buy.
Or somebody's garage sale.
Or somebody's
go
garage sale.
Go see the Peanut Butter Falcon. I mean, go find the Peanut Butter Falcon and see this movie. That's all I'm going
to
tell you.
To what you said, Grego, you know, the thing is, we don't all get the chance to travel in life, okay? We don't all get to do what we want to do. Movies are a way to see things from a different perspective, to see a different world, to really put yourself into these empathy machines. That's what Roger Ebert called them.
Empathy machines.
That's what he said. And you can really see the different perspectives. Films can be very malleable. You can go enjoy Avengers film. I definitely do. But you can also enjoy Marriage Story and enjoy from that perspective. You can enjoy just Little Women. I'm a grown man, and I loved that movie because you can really put yourself in the shoes. And that's what I encourage people to see, you know, films like this, you know, really take a chance and, you know, feel.
I have experienced that feeling of being transported when you completely lose yourself while watching a movie and then it's over with and you look at the time and you're like, oh yeah, I'm back to reality. Yeah. And so, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's a neat experience.
When you
get into a really good movie, you know? So, Doug Harris, Regina Scruggs, and James Cole Clay, Houston Film Critics Society. We can find you online.
HoustonFilmCritics.com.
Yeah.
And it will take you to our different outlets where you can hear all of our work or see all of our work or sing along to all of our work.
And we have a Facebook page also.
Good.
We're on the Facebook, yes.
Because when it's all over and done with, if our friends here were, you know, wrong, let them have it on their page, not ours.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, guys. Hey,
thanks for having us, Grego.
Thank you.
That was good.
Nice seeing you.
Happy nice trail. To see you as well.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the Oscars, folks.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.